Correctly with the correct amount.
D20 Radio, your gamer's role.
www.d20radio.com.
Welcome to the Save or Die Podcast, a podcast about classical Dungeons and Dragons. If it's in a box, we'll talk about it.
Hello, folks, and welcome back to the Save or Die Podcast, adventure number 9. Looks like Guy will be the lone standing person in this podcast because Mike and Liz had to step out of town for an emergency meeting, so they will not be joining us. So it'll be all me, all the time, talking about things you do not like. No, I'm kidding. I brought on two special guests tonight. A voice you might have heard from here or there. The person that has done the Lumpers audio drama and various other audio dramas and probably have done voiceovers for the show, Mr. DM Glenn. Glenn, how are you doing tonight?
Oh, I'm doing... how did I get that in my throat? I'm doing fine. I don't know. My voice does it every once in a while. I think it's hairballs. I'm doing great. And how are you, Vince?
Oh, I'm just ducky.
Oh, boy. I play Duck Tower.
All right. Cool. And we also have a special guest, DM Chris, or Crispy. Chris, you want to go by Crispy or Chris?
Crispy's fine.
Crispy, you might have heard his voice from the Roll for Initiative Actual Play podcast as our friendly little dwarven character that everybody loves.
Hey, dwarf!
Oi.
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 Chris
Glenn and I are just going to have an oi off.
Oi off? Yeah. He'll be joining us tonight to get a little retrospective of the newer generation of gamers looking back to the older as he has come back into the dark side and playing the games that we all love instead of the games we don't like. Right?
Right.
Actually, I play the games that people generally are okay with. I don't play that one.
The edition that shall not be named.
Yes.
Which one is it this week?
4-5.
Well, why don't we start off with a little bit of history so everybody gets an idea of who we're talking to. So, Glenn, why don't you take the center stage and the microphone and tell us a little bit about yourself.
History? Well, I was born in a log cabin.
No, not that far back.
Not that far? Oh, my gaming history? Yes. Well, I live here in Oklahoma City, and I don't know why. And I've been out of gaming for about 5-6 years, maybe. I started with First Edition. I never started with Basic. By the time I got into it, some friends... And my history in gaming, I thought, was always kind of a little retarded, like unusual. Because I started with First Edition, the DM that got us into it, we played like 2-3 games in First Edition. Okay, you know how to play this. Now we're going to play Gamble World all the time. Oh, okay. And so I played Gamble World for like 3 years. Nothing but.
Thundar the Barbarian.
Yeah, oh, God. I had a whole family called the McGonagalls I can go on about, man. All mutants all the time. The bulk of my D&D ended up into second edition, because by the time I got away from them and got into a real group, I was playing that and Champions. I'm a 12-year Champions veteran. I started with second edition all the way through the big blue book. I bought the fifth edition, but by that time I wasn't playing. And I played some 3.5 when it came out. And then when fourth edition, I'd been out of gaming for a while, so I just hit the wall. I said, that's it. Enough. I'm going backwards. And so now I'm backwards back into first edition. Now I'm into basic here, which is, to me, kind of uncharted territory, because there's a lot of different versions out there of that. I didn't realize that, from the white boxes all the way up to AD&D. It's, okay, well, this was written by who? Oh, okay, so they're going to do it this way. Okay, fine. But I think basically they're all the same.
Pretty much they're all the same, just various tweaks and changes here and there along the way.
Okay. I'm willing to learn. First edition I kind of understand, although I hate the books because they're not organized. Second edition is like a, like I said, it's like a comfortable pair of slippers you hide so the wife doesn't throw out. And third, 3.5, well, it's what it is. I'm thankful that the D20 came along with the OGL. It kind of saved everybody's bacon and kept role-playing going. I can play or not. But right now, my course is set for like basic and first.
Sounds
because I remember having fun.
Sounds interesting. Glenn might be joining us one time or another again to give us a little retrospective on the new player looking back as well. So.
Oh, and I also happen to be the Judges Guild expert, I understand. So.
Yeah, because you own all the modules, right?
Well, yeah. Well, no, I have this big box of Judges Guild. And, oh, you're the expert. I guess I'll have to start reading them, huh?
Okay. Yeah, I think so. Okay, cool. And now let's head over to the Crispy. Let's go to the Crispy Show. But we have to do his whole voice as Trash the Dwarf. No, I'm kidding.
All right, like so, way back in the day of 2003, I got into the hobby.
I was kidding about that.
Yeah, I'm
where'd the pirate come from?
Ah,
wow.
Sorry, go ahead. I'm sorry.
So, like many people, I got into role-playing during high school. Except mine was many, many years after everyone else. So I've been gaming since 2003 in high school. So we sat down at lunch and we played this game, Dungeons & Dragons. And I'm not sure exactly what edition it was, but I and my now best friend sat down and we wanted to join in. So they had us roll up a character and we went on a little mini adventure that lasted one lunch period, and it ended with us walking off into the horizon.
Oh, wow.
And after that, that got me hooked.
I'm impressed.
Yeah, I went home and I tried to remember as much as I could from the very, very brief rules explanation that I got. And my friends and I, we started playing these made-up role-playing games that had like a loose basis of the stats. And then you know, I think when I was about 14, there was a. I actually got my first set of books, and we went to this game store called the Game Haven, and I bought my Player's Handbook 3.5 because that's what was out.
Yeah, I know.
And then a used bookstore a couple weeks later opened up behind our apartment complex, so I went and I just all my allowance, all the birthday money I could, I just went and I ate up these books, and I had stuff from Basic, I've got stuff from First Edition, and I didn't know that there was a difference. I did, but it didn't matter to us, so we were using, like, I didn't have a DMG from the edition we were playing, but I had a First Edition DMG, so I would use that, and I would, like, look up the rules, and over time, I managed to finally get a complete set of core books for 3.5, and went through, and we played that for the last 7 years or something like that. But I always came back to the older books. Like, I have a lot of these, I don't even know where I got them, but I have Keep on the Borderlands, the Holmes Blue Book, and just reading these, I think one thing that draws me to the older editions is they have this mystique about them, like this air of
fun?
Yeah, I don't know. Not quite that. It's a they have a definite look and feel, and I think that feel gets translated better than any other game.
There's also
when you look at the illustrations, you know, however bad they might be, or ever however good they might be, when like people like Elmore and whatnot started taking over, there's always this tone that it has, which is this kind of high adventure, kind of dark city streets.
Yeah,
and I don't know. It's drawn me in. Now with the OSR, the old school Renaissance or Revival or whatever you want to call it, it's getting easier and easier to play these games. And you have great shows like this and that other podcast, you know, that one, that kind of help. Yeah, they help bring a lot of ideas and rules clarification as well.
Well, yeah, that's what we try to do. And we're trying. The whole purpose of these podcasts are to promote the old school Renaissance or the old school Revival and to help the newer generation realize what mistakes they are making by playing the later editions.
And foster debate and understanding between the generations of role players.
Yes, we're like the next generation. Okay.
And one thing I try to do is Like, I go and I just love to read rule books. I don't know. There's just something soothing about it. But I like to have that tone in my games. I play Pathfinder pretty weekly. And
cool.
I don't know. I just I'm building a world that kind of has this OD&D, AD&D feel to it.
Oh, well, yeah. Pathfinder itself has a very AD&D first edition feel to it to begin with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they definitely are fans of the old school.
I had a long conversation with one of the designers at Gen Con. I can't think of his name. I think his name was Eric. I don't know who he was in the company, but...
It was Eric Mona. He's the publisher.
Oh, was it? Okay. Then it was, that's who I spoke with then. Because I remember...
He was the head guy of Dragon for the last few years, and Dungeon.
Ah.
That's right.
Because I remember reading, I think it was the Grognardia or something, someone interviewed him, and he said on it, he had a cool conversation with someone that was involved with the podcast about the old school Renaissance and how, you know, they like Pathfinder, and I was like, well, cool, that was me, actually. I spoke to him. So I didn't even know who I was speaking to, and I had a great conversation with him, and he was all into the old school, and how he told me the direction of Pathfinder he wanted to go and everything, and I was like, oh, this is really cool.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He definitely, he has a blog for EN World called Mona's Musings, and if you guys haven't read it, check it out. He talks about, like, his Call of Cthulhu game that he plays around the office that they only get to play, like, once a year. And his AD&D game that he just recently got to play. The article, actually, he starts in, he thought he was going to go play Basic. But they, like, someone was like, hey, let's get some, you know, old school gaming going on. And he's like, well, I've never played Basic. So he like, looked up the rules and stuff, and then when he got there, it's like, they were playing first edition, so he was so relieved.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I know Frank Mentzer has hailed Pathfinder as being a great game as well, and, you know, he's an old Grognardian, so, he, you know, if he if he says something from the newer generation is good, you know it has to be somewhat good.
I could listen to him talk all day. He's a great... those interviews were great.
Yeah, definitely.
We had a lot of fun talking to him, yeah.
Yeah.
Actually the first Save or Die that I ever heard was the interview with Mentzer.
Really?
A lot of people, yeah.
Yeah, that brought in a lot of people. It's really good.
Well, people said, well, what's the point of an interview with him like that? I'm like, well, we can ask him a question on the forum. I go, yeah, that's true, but wouldn't you rather have your question read and have his voice answer instead of typing words? I mean...
And not only that, but people who you interview, it's like, yeah, he could type the answer out of the forum, but this way you get the answer plus...
Some afterthoughts and... Yeah.
Yeah, that kind of thing. Fill-ins. And it's definitely worth it.
Yeah, and you could really tell that he's very active on the forums because he knew, you know, different users who would... When their question came up and you read their username, he's like, oh, yeah, I know this person. So it really does show, like, I think the graybeards are kind of a little more dedicated than some of the other designers.
This is what I love about role-playing in general as far as that goes. The designers, there, it seems like everybody's accessible, but especially the old schoolers.
Mm-hmm.
These guys, you just walk up, ask them a question, boom, talk, you know. None of this on-high stuff of other publishers.
Yeah, the older school generation people seem like they're more laid back now than they were a long time ago.
Yeah, more accessible, and, you know, they know the people. These are the people playing, still playing the games, and they're really appreciative of that.
Right, when I spoke to Tim Kask at Gen Con, he, you know, practically pulled up two chairs to sit down and have a long conversation. It was that great of a conversation I had with him, so...
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he was more than willing to sit down, have a little chat. He didn't, nothing. He was like, oh, yeah, I'm sure, cool, yeah, I love talking about the this and that and TSR and Gary, and he was all boom, 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 boom.
Yeah, how'd you do this? How'd you do that? Yeah.
He was all happy to answer any questions, so I was really grateful to actually have a little time to speak to him. Just didn't have a chance to record it, which I'm kind of sad about, but whatever.
In the future, maybe we can have him on again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it makes me sad I was kind of born late. To miss all this stuff.
Oh, I think you were born at just the right time for this Renaissance.
Definitely.
But, I mean, yeah, I understand what you're saying, but still, you know, you're reaping the rewards now.
Oh yeah, I love Retroclones. I always keep my eyes out for them. The layout is a lot because they've had so much experience with, oh, this is how this should work. So I really having all this back catalog of experience has really helped these games become more accessible to someone like me.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And we love you for it.
All right. So why don't we move into our first segment of tonight. We'll talk a little bit about into DM Fiat. We'll talk a little bit about experience points.
Nope. Sorry.
What?
Nope, you're wrong. Look it up.
I don't have to look it up. It's common knowledge.
Nope. No, no, no.
Yeah. All right, so experience points. A lot of people have problems doling out
that
experience
points. That was a great bumper, by the way. Let me just say.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Anyway, go ahead. Experience points.
Yes, experience points. People have trouble giving out experience points, and some people fudge it. Some people follow strictly by the rules. So let's talk a little bit more about experience points and how, say, Crispy would do it, or how Glenn would do it, or how I would do it. Let's, who wants to go first?
Crispy, it's all yours.
Okay, Crispy was nominated.
I'm very, I kind of have an in-between. I'm kind of the median. I like to do a lot of ad hoc and a lot of bonus EXP.
Right.
Because it helps the players feel like they're being rewarded.
Bonus XP is in what? Like role-playing XP, or...?
Role-playing, if you come up with something extremely clever, just being entertaining. I have a player who plays a thief in our OD&D games named Two-Foot Jeff, who is so self-delusional that he makes up these just outrageous lies and actually believes them to be true.
Nice.
And, you know, like, if you're doing combat, I kind of do combat by the book. I'm a little more generous, with bonus abilities. You know, like in Holmes, the bonus abilities, I think they could have been a little more generous. Not generous, but I'm trying to think of the word. There's not really there's a couple instances where it's like, well, this I think would technically count as a special ability. But, you know, that's the DM. That's what you're up to. If you want to award the bonus EXP, do it. But I think the majority of my experience points that I give out come from role-playing and just entertaining me. It's kind of like a game of whose line is it anyways.
Oh, I love that show, yeah. The points don't matter?
Yeah.
The points do matter.
Yeah.
That's what you're striving for.
Well, so but, do you jot things down during your adventure and to remember, or are you just at the end when it's time for experience, you just remember everything that happened?
I give them out as it happens, actually. So if someone does something that makes me crack up, I'll be like, hey, take 50 experience.
Wow.
Like, that's,
money bags here.
Yeah, it's not quite as often as you would think. I generally hate everything. Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of, I tend to play against them, so.
Okay.
Okay.
Are you a very adversarial DM, or?
I can be. I try not to be. It's something I'm working on, I guess.
Okay. Okay. I'm just curious, because I'm a little anti, I'm not saying I'm against, I'm anti that, it's just, it's different for me, that's all. Anyway, what were we talking about, experience?
Yes. Yeah. So you hand it out as the things happen. Like if they defeat
as
a monster.
As they happen, yeah.
As they defeat a monster and the encounter or the...
No, that stuff I tally up.
Okay.
But bonus EXP for doing particularly well or being creative, I'll give out on the fly.
Hmm.
Oh, man. I should do more of that.
Kind of like...
Yeah, it helps them to just... It's kind of like a classical...
Loosens them up.
Well, it's classical conditioning. They do something you like, and you give them a reward for it, and then they do it again, and you give them another reward. They're going to keep trying to do that. So it kind of trains your players to kind of...
Give them a cookie, they go away. Got it.
Yeah.
The monkey hitting the switch, getting the peanut.
Yeah. I look at you all at this table. You remind me of monkeys.
Yeah. That's a good idea. I usually just give it at the end and I tell them what they got it for, but I've never really done it on the fly. Have you taken experience away from them on the fly, too?
I threaten, but I'm a big softy. They give me those pleading faces and puppy dog eyes, and I'm just like, I hate you guys.
So you don't do the whole gamers darkness rising, you minus 50 experience points, and we've all just become dumber by that statement you just given us, whatever that line was.
No, I don't do that. If I say lose X amount of experience points, they know that they've done something bad. And I threaten all the time, but I never do it. But I think it gets the point across.
Interesting.
That is really interesting. Is it fun? I mean, should you minus experience points from your players because they've had a bad session or because they're really annoying during that session or just disruptive? You think it's fair or not fair? I think it's fair.
I think it's fair. I have a pretty good group, so I don't have to worry about that. It's when joking gets out of hand or they tell a joke that I'm tired of. It's kind of my way of saying, guys, you're not funny. Let's keep it rolling. But I've never had a super disruptive player that I've just had to kick out of my house because they're so just, I don't want to say bad, but misbehaving. We're all adults. No one should act like a 10-year-old. It ruins it for the whole group.
Yeah. I've never had that extreme behavior out of anybody, fortunately. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, why don't we step over to the Glenn spectrum and see how he does his experience.
Well, first off, let me answer by answering that last question is I never, ever take away experience. I figure once given, it's given, and I have a whole lot of other things I could do to them if I wanted to make my point across, if they're being annoying or whatever. And because it's like, okay, I can't make somebody dumber in real life. How do I do it here? I have a problem with draining levels too, but that's another story. But as far as experience go, I see where everybody is beforehand, see what it'd take to get them to the next level, and then I adjust accordingly. Now, giving it on the fly, I think that's a great idea because I usually like, okay, I got my monster sheet here. They're fighting this, and I got their names down here. Okay, he took a hit. He took a hit. He took a hit on this monster, and this guy killed him. So at the end, it's like a big calculator session. Okay, you get such and such. You get such, and you, oh, you flew off the banister. Okay, I'm going to give you some more for that. But I like your idea of giving it out on the fly. So mine's a little bit more, anal. But to tell you the truth, handing out experience is my least favorite part of the game.
Really?
Just because it involves numbers and like, if it was me, I would just say, everybody take 500 experience out of petty cash. Go ahead. You know, and I'll see you next week.
You could do that.
Yeah, you totally do that.
Yeah.
I've seen many DMs just say, great session tonight. Everybody gets 300 experience points. James, you get an extra 50 because of that cool stunt that you pulled, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, in heavy roleplay sessions, I do that all the time because we'll have sessions where there's no combat.
Also, part of it is the reason I have a problem with it is because I'm used. I played champions for 12 years, and a really exceptional session will give you maybe 5.
Yeah, it's like the vampire experience points.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's a big deal if you get like 2 experience points per session. And here it's like, what are these hundreds and hundreds of numbers here?
That's the problem with a lot of D&D players when they go from playing D&D to, say, like Vampire the Masquerade or Werewolf or even Champions. It's just like, okay, so that's the end of the session. You get 3 experience points, you get 2, and you get 1. It's just like, yay.
I definitely know where you're coming from. That happened to me the first time I ever played Vampire, and we got awarded EXP. Like, take 3, and I'm like, well, that's not very much.
Actually, that's quite a bit for Vampire.
I know, but I'm so used to playing D&D.
Like in Champions, you know, 5 points will go pretty far.
Yeah.
If you play it right. And some of them save up to like 50, 100, 150, and then, ba-boom, hey, I've got a new origin. I got these powers now. You know, that kind of thing. And it doesn't take very long. But here it's like, you earn every single one, damn it, you know?
Oh, boy, yeah. So,
yeah.
We're finishing up on your how you award your experience. Do you have anyone use a chart or anything? Or
only at the beginning. Like I said, before the game, I try to reference it. I got a thing against referencing like charts during a game. I just think it slows it down. I will if I have to. And God help me if I ever have to crack a book open. Because it's like, come on, come on, come on. This is slowing down the game. So, okay, fine.
That's what you use. That's what you use your iPad for, and you just do the quick file.
Oh, shut up.
What you can do, Glenn, and this is actually what I do, is I write down what they've defeated or what they've overcome, and then I do experience later. I don't give it out at the end of the session. I like to give it out at the end of like a story arc.
Okay, like you say three games down the road or something.
Yeah, like say during a session they beat 2 3 hit die monsters, 5 2+1s, and 4 hit die monster. You write that down and then calculate it later.
Okay, well that makes sense too.
Yeah,
you could always like you know email it to them too if you want. I guess.
Yeah, or use Epic Ords. I like my next Pathfinder campaign. I'm not going to give them an EXP face to face at all. It's just going to get updated on their Epic Ords accounts.
Much how like how I'm doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, is that how you're doing it?
Yeah, I don't tell them what they have. I just update the XP. I think some people have almost leveled. Yet.
Got it. Okay. yeah, but unfortunately, I feel like I've been, I don't want to say plagued, but I seem to always run into players who want to give me the eve so I can level up.
Well, that's power gamers mostly.
Yeah, I've ran into more than my share, I think. Like I said, it probably comes from champions because you know it's really easy to min-max in that game.
Well, I like to give my experience points out probably at the end of the game, at the end of the night, if there's time. Otherwise, I'll just say next week and I'll calculate it on my own. But I have a little chart.
Yeah.
That I design with each player's name on it, and like for role playing stuff, I'll put a check on it next to their, in the row in their name, and also for monsters, when I plan them out. I'll put the experience total next to it as opposed to just the hit dice. So for quicker reference, instead of going to the chart, go calculate it. I'll put XP 100 there. So then if they defeat that monster, boom, I put a check on it. So I know when I go back over the session notes that they defeated this monster. Sometimes I'll go as far as writing the person's initial next to who defeated the monster to give them extra XP. Because when I played with the Joe DM, Mr. Joe, the great Joe, he used to give experience on who actually defeated the monster, too. So.
Ah, I see. Okay.
So that was his,
Do you have that chart? I mean, is that like a blank thing you make up every time, or do you have a form or something like that that we can look at?
It's actually just a hand-drawn thing I do every time.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, that would make a cool
download. Yeah, you should definitely write up a template and put it out.
I know. I always thought about doing it. I was just like, eh, because you never know who's playing, so.
Mm-hmm. And I was, okay, you're right. But, I mean, you could do a player 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's a thought.
I do like the crispy method of handing experience points out, like, right away when something's really cool is done or something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the players I run in, you do that, they're probably going to go, okay, now I have this.
I've done combat moves based upon someone actually doing the actual move in real life and succeeding or not.
Oh, okay. I remember hearing about this, yeah.
When my player once said, he's like, well, I roll out of the hatch door, and I stand up, and I flip both my daggers in the spin, and I stab the guy in the back. I was like, dude, you can't do that unless you roll like a really high, maybe a 20-something. He's like, no, it's easy to do, trust me. I'm like, no, dude, it's not. He's like, I can do it. I'm like, okay. I'm like, if you can go in the living room and do this, I will give it to you as a hit. So we all went in the living room laughing hysterical because most people were drunk. So he did it. He rolled off the ottoman onto the floor and got to his feet and spun his imaginary daggers and stabbed the person. So I gave it to him because he actually took the time out to do it.
Whoa.
Yeah. That was also.
I give him extra for that.
Oh yeah, he did. He always got extra experience points because he was a big role player.
Oh man, I mean, yeah, I'm an actor and role player too. But whew, man, put me in the
hospital. Same. I'm kind of same story with Glenn.
Yeah. It's like, God help him. I mean, God love him, you know. Man, oh, man.
And but anyway. A lot of times with experience points, I don't generally stick to what the actual experience is. Like, I'll throw in a little extra here and there. Because I like to reward players so they feel, you know, happy and all gooey inside. Not, you know, like, oh, you got 100 experience points. Yay.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, 107 experience points.
So the consensus is giving experience on the fly is a good thing.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And I do believe in taking away experience points, too, for someone who's just that annoying.
I think if I had a player who was just that annoying, I would. But like I said, most of my players are pretty good.
Yeah.
But, they make really lame puns, but so do I.
Whatever you're comfortable with, I guess. Whatever they're comfortable with. Well, who cares? They're players. Anyway, I didn't say that.
All right, so the consensus, like Glenn said, was everybody has no problem giving XP on the fly. Tell us how you do it, saveordiepodcast@gmail.com, or you can go on the forums, Dragonfoot. We do have a forum now that is a sub-forum of the classical Dungeons & Dragons forums in Dragonfoot.
You can try it if you find it.
Yes.
You can find it, yes.
Some people were used to it being at the bottom, but good old Steve at Dragonfoot decided to move it as a sub-forum so we can get a little more noticeability and more traffic for
the show.
Now
it's a five-day quest through the caverns of Terrakia to get there.
No, it is not.
Oh, I thought it was.
No.
Wait
no.
a minute. Oh, I gave that guy... never mind. It's just money.
Just money. Okay, let's head into our next segment of the Night of Random Encounters. Random encounters. So random encounters.
Man, those bumpers keep getting better and better.
Are you gonna comment?
Sorry,
on
go ahead.
Bumpers? I don't know. I think we have to redo the random encounters bumper.
Oh, okay. Well, twist my arm. Go ahead.
Yeah.
So anyway, what do we got?
We have all things that are wear.
Underwear?
No, not underwear.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, notice I paused for the bad joke too.
Yeah, you should be used to
I'm used
surrounded
to...
by comedians.
Yes, I'm used to you now, Glenn.
I wish I was.
So all things wear, basically lycanthropy. So what is lycanthropy? It is a disease. Do they find a cure for the disease? No, probably not.
Dang, I thought it was a lifestyle.
So basically, it's a disease. Any human character, according to the Mulvey rules, can have. I don't think the demi-humans can actually attract this disease.
No, they can't. They'll die.
Really?
It's supposed to manifest. Yes.
Now this is according to what, Mulvey or?
I believe it's Mulvey. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm looking at. Forgive me. Listeners, I'm looking at Labyrinth Lord, which is basically just Mulvey repackaged. And it says here that demi-humans and other non-humans do contract the disease, but they die after 2d6 days rather than become a lycanthrope.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's kind of harsh.
Yeah, the disease will kill non-humans instead of turning them into were-creatures.
Okay, I can fly with that.
So
I don't know, it's kind of... I wondered when I first read that, why they die.
I don't know.
Why do we have... Like, why can't you have a were-dwarf?
Maybe the disease is incompatible with their body system or something. I don't know.
It is a good question.
It's like it's targeting humans.
It was the perfect killer.
Yes.
Grown in the lab. We used wolf DNA cultures.
Liquid wolf metal.
I think what it was the reason why certain things work with just humans only, because most of the games were encouraging people to play humans as opposed to anything else.
That's right. It was very human-centric.
Yeah.
Humanocentric.
Why else would they not have classes for dwarves and elves? But I'm looking over the chart on the Lycanthrope right now. We got were-rats, were-wolf, were-boar, were-tiger, were-bear, and this is the Metzer Redbox.
And then later on, in other editions, we had the were-shark, as we all joked about for a while.
I heard something about a were... I'm sorry, go ahead.
The devil swine.
Devil swine?
It's,
I hadn't heard about that one.
It's a giant pig that can freely shift during the night between human and swine form, but during the day it has to stay in one. And they particularly love the taste of human flesh.
Well, I hope it does. And that's like a lycanthrope? That is a lycanthrope?
Yeah, it's a lycanthrope.
Yeah, we got one in our town. The worst part about it is it's the rabbi.
Hey, man, that's not kosher.
I know. Neither is he. Anyway.
It looks like, from looking at the chart for the Mulvey rules, it looks like the werewolf is not the most powerful creature of them all, even though you would probably think it would be.
Uh-huh. It's the most I believe werebear is the most powerful, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, sign me up, man. I mean, you know, a 2d8 hug plus a claw bite, plus I can call other bears. Yeah, I want that.
Plus you're very intelligent.
Plus I'm intelligent.
But and you're a good guy.
Yes, I am. I'm a good guy lycanthrope.
Well,
I just like the idea. It's like Grizzly Adams and the bear.
Why would you say he's a good guy?
Well, I believe they are neutral. Sorry, go ahead.
I remember reading, I'll have to look through. I've got three different versions in front of me. But I remember reading that they're actually more benign than the other wares.
Yeah. Oh, I see what you're saying. It might be friendly, however, if peacefully approached. And
yeah, so Holmes Blue Book, under Werebear, they are neutral or chaotic good.
Right, yeah, Holmes does that, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. I'd like to see a fight between a werewolf and a werebear and see what happens.
Well, probably the werebear would kill the werewolf.
All right, a pack of them. Werewolves, I mean.
Now, a werebore.
A werebore.
I don't know if that kind of looks goofy, if you've seen a werebore.
Well, that's kind of me after five drinks, but...
wow.
Anyway.
I always thought that the different versions of lycanthropes were just... They get kind of silly. Like, the were-tiger. I don't see what the point of having a were-tiger in there is.
Yeah. I mean, you've got all these other big cats, and you've got a wolf and a rat, and it's like, okay... Are we going to have, like, a were-centipede? Something like that.
That would be terrifying.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, jeez. If anything, I'd want to be a were-bear or a werewolf. I wouldn't want to be stuck with the were-rat.
No.
I mean, you're a little rodent, and you're disgusting. You probably smell worse than all the rest of them, and you're a rat.
Now, do you turn into a giant rat or just a rat?
You're like a giant anthropomorphic man rat.
See, that's also somewhat of a discussion also, which I thought about while we're talking about this. In your campaigns, what would you have them change into? Like an actual creature or a half man, half creature like traditional movies would do?
Well, I would go with the half man, half creature because I am a nut about like the old Universal horror films. And, right. You know. Larry Talbot, the Wolfman, and stuff like that. So I would have him do the half and half.
Same here. I think there's a lot of evocative art of the half man, half animal creature with the tattered clothing and the hunched physique. I just think it's cooler than here's a really big wolf.
And besides, a lot of these were creatures can call other. I mean, like werewolves can call true wolves.
Mm-hmm.
And werebears can call true bears. So, you know, you got them, but they got the backup too, which is the actual creature.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's very cool because you know, you've got this werewolf you encounter on a dark, foggy night in the quiet, sleepy town.
Oh!
And as you're about to surround him, he howls at the moon, and as he's fighting you off, more wolves show up.
Yeah.
To help him in his cause of eating you.
And you know you're totally lost.
And you've just been... And it's dark, so you've been eaten by a Gru.
There you go. All that's left is for the Rust monsters.
Yeah, I do like the idea of doing, whenever I think of a lycanthrope or a half, whatever, I think of the whole traditional, looks like part of a man, but has the features and the physique of like a werewolf, like the traditional Wolfman movies from the 30s. Uh-huh. And I don't like the whole, you change into an actual creature running around type thing, so.
Yeah, that's kind of lame.
Yeah.
Well, some people like to go with that, so.
Mm-hmm. But, all right, sorry. It's not lame.
I just, especially when, like, you come to the were-rat, I like that form better because it just, it's demonic Templeton from Charlotte's Web.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Good call. Better attitude, I hope. It's funny you should mention the wares. Mm-hmm. I will just cover this briefly. In my Judges Guild wanderings, I have the Book of Treasure Maps by Paul Jacques, and it seems like the centerpiece. There are like five different mini adventures, but it seems the centerpiece is the Lone Tower, which is basically a tower that only appears in the full moon, and it's run by a female werewolf and her clan. And very interesting stuff, and it just uses the way. I mean, they've got werewolves. They basically say, okay, well, you can handle them as werewolves, or you can handle them as big wolves, or however you want to handle them. So it gives you a lot of flexibility. It's a pretty good adventure too.
Cool.
That's my two cents.
And just following along with tradition of reviewing things, how many dragons would you give it?
Oh, 36.
Hey, out of five.
You didn't say that.
Oh, well, he just really likes it.
Yeah.
Well, I haven't really finished reading the whole book, but that was up. I'm assuming the rest is great because it's Paul Jacques and it's Judges Guild. I give it like 4.5
out of five. Wow.
Out of five. Yeah, it is a really good actually a really good read. It's a lot of fun. Anyway, so were creatures.
Definitely.
Now, why is not? Think clear, Glenn. Okay. Were tiger. What's the downside on a were tiger again?
You're a cat girl, and all the anime fanboys will be after you.
Wow.
It's the major one that comes to mind.
Well, that's true. Or if you go for the traditional Val Luton cat people.
Yeah. Thing. Cats on Broadway.
Cats on Broadway. Oh, God. No, please. No, no. Don't go there. Uh-uh.
Or you could be... Or you could be
sorry, what?
Or you could be a giant Tony the Tiger.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that'd be great.
Great. Yeah.
Great. No. Oh, you're a mean one, Mr. Grinch. Anyway, yeah, so were tigers we're not fond of, but wares, I would basically play them like wolfmen. That's my vote.
I don't think I've ever used a were tiger ever. Have you guys?
No,
I think it's more of a Middle Eastern. I remember reading the were tigers are from Indian folklore.
What's that one monster that looks like a human tiger?
The Rakshasa.
The Rakshasa. I mean, you got one of those. What do you need a were tiger for?
Fun.
Well, the Rakshasa is more of it's a trickster monster. It's like a cunning, super intelligent, like magical beast.
So it's like a were tiger, only worse.
Yeah, it's the were-tiger that's hyper-intelligent and able to shape-change.
I'd use, given the choice, I'd use that one.
Yeah.
Unless I have, like, first levels, and then I'd, like, you know, give my house cat to play with or something. I don't know.
Now, would you go inventing your own type of were-creatures, maybe, you think? Or that'd be going too far?
Well, I don't know if it was this podcast or the other, our sister podcast, but somebody mentioned a were-buffalo.
Yeah, someone did mention a were-buffalo, yes.
Were-buffalo, I tried to wrap my mind around that. I just couldn't. It's like you turn into a buffalo, you were-buffalo, well, you just stand there and look at people and eat grass?
Yes. And wait to be shot.
I just imagine when you say were-buffalo, a certain certain race from a very popular multiplayer online RPG.
Oh?
Called World of Warcraft, called the Tauren.
Yeah, that's what I think of. Or there was a cartoon on when I was a kid where you had these cowboys from space, but they were actually cows.
Oh, God. God, I think I've seen that.
Oh, the Cowboys of Mu Mesa or something like, and they were like in something a planet like that was Western. Yeah, it was really bizarre watching these cows riding horses.
Crispy, you don't have to lie. We know you were watching it yesterday. You can tell us.
It's true. I was on YouTube. Like, man, I gotta relive my childhood.
Oh, and one more thing about this this Lonely Tower module.
Oh yeah.
Some of her followers are wolf wares. Wolves that are cursed with lycanthropy to be human at the full moon.
True. There is also that version of the disease, but it's a different type of disease, actually.
Is it?
I thought wolf wares were magical. Like, they were just beasts that... Is it actually like... I'll have to look it up. But is it actually like a disease like lycanthropy?
It might be.
That's the way they play it. From what I read, that's the way they play it. But then again, this is back when they didn't have all that kind of stuff. So it's like, you know, monsters turn up in these things that I go, what?
Yeah, a lot of stuff was just, mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. But some of it's good. Some of it's like, okay, the drugs were thick that day. Okay.
So what are we going to make up our own were-creatures, you think? Well, what were-creature off the top of your head would you make up?
I kind of like the were-centipede. I think that would just be that too. Terrifying to encounter. So just the transformation process.
Assuming it was a giant centipede they turned into, or a giant centipede man, not just... step on it. Okay.
Oh, phew. How many experience points do I get for the bug?
One. So there'd be no were-deer, huh?
Why not? I want to... Oh, I know what I want. A were-moose.
Yeah, I was thinking about a were-moose. That'd be kind of tough.
Yeah, he'd be
tough.
That
would be pretty tough.
He's got those big old antlers. Bam! And you know?
Moose are gigantic and extremely strong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Only because I wouldn't get a were-elephant.
that would be the saddest movie ever. The were-elephant.
Oh, don't go.
All he wanted was to be loved.
No, don't go.
They thought he was a monster.
I'm okay.
Anyway, oh, boy.
I digress. We digress.
And I think on that note, we're going to sling our backpacks onto our shoulder and head down that lonely road of going to the next town, Bill Bixby style.
Oh, are we supposed to cry now?
Yes.
Cry, baby. Cry. What the heck kind of music is this? Anyway, okay, sure. Yeah, I can say goodbye, I guess. How about you, Chris?
I'm sad that it has to end so soon. But...
Here, use my shoulder, friend.
Thanks, Glenn.
Okay. We'll be back next week, and hopefully, I believe Mike and Liz will be back. At least one of them will be back. And just so you guys don't feel sad. Hello, I'm Liz! See, there she is. So we'll be back next
week. Hello, I'm Mike.
I'm going to go up to Canada. Maybe I'll fight Wolverine. I don't know.
Yeah. Please do.
Enjoy, and we'll see you next time. And run while you can, save or die, something or other. See you later.
Okay. Bye-bye.
If you have any comments, please email saveordiepodcast@gmail.com or visit Save or Die at saveordie.info. Follow the cast on Facebook / Save or Die Podcast, or follow them on Twitter @TheEvilDM.